You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But I remember, like, in the callbacks, everyone was doing the same blocking and the same choices because they'd have us cook up these scenes. And I remember thinking, like, why is everybody making the same choices?
I'm Kevin Blyer, the host of The Backdrop, and what actor Matt Harrington just described of his audition for the play That Goes Wrong is the same question I have been asking myself since I first saw it on Broadway. What really is going on here? I mean, really.
And I remember thinking, like, why is everybody making the same choices? And then I, like, got the job and we started rehearsing and I was like, oh, because they saw the show and they knew what they were doing.
And it also would seem to me that the same choices are vitally important to some mm-hmm. degree because of
safety.
Basically someone dies otherwise.
Someone will die.
If the play That Goes Wrong truly goes wrong, someone will die. For reasons we'll get into in a future episode. Yeah, this is going to be a multi-parter. If the play That Goes Wrong goes right, it is, to my mind, the best written play to hit Broadway in the past few years. Take that, Oslo! Okay, I loved Oslo too. It's the biggest hit yet for Mischief Theatre Company, co-founded by a trio of Lambigrads in the UK. It won a Tony for its mousetrap-like set, and its premise is simple. A murder mystery, put on by a local theatre troupe. And it goes wrong. That's all you need to know. But as I told Mischief co-founder, artistic director, and original cast member Henry Lewis, never mind the mystery plot. There was a mystery I needed solved.
Henry, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure, I assure you. First, as I've already told you, I'm a fan of this.
Full disclosure, I have seen the play 7 times. Yes, 7. And I'll mention that more than once here. And from the outset, an apology. In real life, I try not to be quite such an obsequious sycophant. But when it comes to Henry Lewis, I couldn't help it.
The play That Goes Wrong is a play about a mystery. I'm hoping that you, as one of the co-creators in the play, and of course one of the original actors in that play, playing an actor in a mystery, will solve a mystery for me. You know I'm a cynical comedy writer. Why do I like it so damn much?
I don't know.
Aha, a dead end. This plot thickens. It would appear that this podcast about the play That Goes Wrong has already gone wrong. Yet I was still determined to get to the bottom of why I, a cynical comedy writer, could let down my defenses just enough to laugh every damn time this play wanted me to. So, Henry, how about a clue?
Well, I guess, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's a really sort of, I think in a lot of ways it's a really simple show. You know, it's just about these guys doing this play and it means an awful lot to them and they really, really want it to go well. It's their opening night. Every night is opening night. And they just want it to be brilliant. And of course, the harder they try to make it good, the worse and worse it goes, and the more sort of painful it is for them. And that's kind of it, really. You know, it is just that. It is a murder mystery that goes wrong in as many ways as possible. I think, you know, it probably went okay for them in the dress rehearsal, but on opening night, the things just didn't quite go right.
I'm not going to let you off the hook that easy.
I wasn't going to let him off the hook that easily.
I'm not going to let you off the hook that easy. You say it's a simple play. I say it's, as you know well, it is an entirely complex play that masters its simplicity, that represents as simplicity. I mean, I came at The Play That Goes Wrong as a fan of straight up great writing. And as I mentioned, I consider it one of the best written plays in the last decade. Easy. What you do with just straight up writing conventions, with your circular dialogue, with your misaligned couplets, I just think that's genius.
I realize now I would have made a terrible detective. I'm buttering up the main suspect. I'm playing good cop, no other cop, to the man who had all the answers.
If I may get into a bit of the nitty-gritty, how did those elements of the play develop? did some of them come and say, I have a pitch for an idea that'll land here at the, in this part of the narrative? Or were even those elements developed improvisationally over the many weeks and months of you performing it in the first iterations?
Well, kind of all of those. I mean, I think that we first wrote the show, it was just an hour long. We did it as a sort of run in a fringe theatre above a pub in North London. And
the old Red Lion, am I right in saying that?
That is right, yeah, absolutely.
See, Henry, I've done my research. That's how much I care.
That's good.
This is getting embarrassing. I am embarrassing myself. I mean, what am I expecting here? Him to say, that's good. That's good knowledge you got there, Kevin.
That's good. That's good knowledge.
Oh, boy.
That's a sort of 60-seat small space, and we did it there. We weren't the main show even. I think we were in the sort of late slot there over Christmas 2012, end of 2012, beginning of 2013. And so it was really, you know, it was kind of shorter, it was simpler, it was kind of a sort of smaller thing. We then met our producers, and so then we wrote a second half to it. So it kind of came about in sort of two stages, the full two-act show. And, you know, we kept working on it. You know, we just sort of did another run. We did another run at the Edinburgh Festival. We did another run at Trafalgar Studios, which is a sort of West End studio space in London. And, you know, we would sort of re-rehearse it, and we'd add stuff, and we'd chop and change things. And even, you know, as we were doing the first version of the two-act piece, we'd still be tweaking and changing stuff. But that was really fun because we sort of had a bit more sort of budget to play with, so we could have add a bit more production value. It meant we could sort of dial up the physical comedy in it. That was really fun. And we were still adding things in the West End, and, you know, so it's sort of, you know, lots of little tweaks and changes over quite a long amount of time.
By we, Henry means himself, Jonathan Sayer, and another Henry, Henry Shields. In my mind, a murderer's row of theater makers, all part of the original cast who all had a hand in crafting the original concept. But by mentioning them, surely Henry is just trying to spread the blame.
I think I'm right in saying you all met at Lambda. Is that correct?
That is right, yeah.
Now, for a play like this, you know, someone comes at it and thinks, this is just straight up funny. I'm enjoying it in the same way that I might enjoy a great stand-up comedian, or I might enjoy an improv troupe. But you went to Lambda. Does it take some classical training to get not just these characters right, but get this comic timing right?
Well, I think a lot of it is about not thinking of it as a comedy. So I think, yes.
A clue. I'm on the right path. I'll have this suspect confessing in no time.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I think that, it is about being able to sort of play it straight, I suppose, in sort of simple terms, but also, you know, just to be able to tell that story and shift between playing kind of two characters, playing the character of the play within the play, but also playing the character of the actor underneath that, and playing the two, but keeping them separate and keeping them clearly defined. We always tend to find when we're recasting the show that we always want actors who've, you know, not necessarily have trained, but actors who are, you know, their bread and butter is, you know, serious acting, or not necessarily serious, but, you know, doing plays rather than, you know, comedians necessarily. Mm-hmm. Just because I think it is, the skills required, I think, are closer to, you know, the skills an actor would have. You know, people have got to have, obviously, have got to have good comic timing and awareness of joke and how that works and all of that kind of thing as well.
Well, now we're getting somewhere. Comic timing, awareness of joke, classical training. But maybe even that, as the Brits might say, doesn't cut the custard. I'm being told Brits don't actually say that. But to carry on.
And I don't think you require that one of your actors has a degree, PhD, I believe, in neuroscience from Harvard, as one of your actors in Off-Broadway does that we spoke with, who, in his defense, also trained at Juilliard. So that's the oddest of double threats. I think that becomes a quintuple threat at some point.
Yeah, that's great.
Very impressive.
We'll get back to Henry, who is, after all, only a triple threat. The Matt I just mentioned is currently starring in the off-Broadway production of the play That Goes Wrong at New World Stages, and he's one of two Matts who both play two characters. It can get a little complicated, but that's the point.
Yes, hello. I'm Matt Harrington, and I play Chris Bean in the play That Goes Wrong.
And I'm Matt Walker. I play Max in the play That Goes Wrong.
Now, I know better than that. I know that actually, Matt Walker, you play Max Bennett, who plays, right?
Did you know your last name?
I learned it recently.
Yeah, I'm compelled to impress them, too, with my devotion to this play, to the point of being that obsequious sycophant I warned you about. And they didn't even write the damn thing. I have seen it 7 times. Told you I'd mention that more than once. In my life, I have seen, I think, no other play 7 times. I actually thought about it. I would bet you that even Hamlet tops out at 6. I haven't even seen a play that I've been in 7 times. Matt Walker's not impressed, nor should he be, because he's a true thespian. I ask him about that, and whether it helps him with the comic timing, the awareness of joke, all the vital stuff Henry Lewis mentioned.
I'd say, for me, the training of a conservatory program, which I was admittedly only in for a year, but the focus on vocal and physical technique and how to sustain a show like this over 8 shows a week was really invaluable. Like, where it's shouting all the time, or the appearance of shouting all the time. The show's very acrobatic, especially my character is very agile and falling into things, falling over things, falling on the ground. So that sort of technical awareness of your toolbox as an actor, I found to be very helpful in the show.
And you were only in Juilliard for a year because I think you went off to become some kind of Nobel Prize-winning neurosurgeon or something.
I haven't won the Nobel yet.
No. By the end of this interview, the door will knock.
Yeah, we'll see.
You are also a neuroscientist.
Yes. Well, neurobiologist, technically.
I believe biology is one of the sciences.
It is.
I didn't get that wrong. You can correct me as much as you want, but wordsmithing.
Yeah, so I study neurons during the day.
Technically, truly, just as your day goes, how is that balanced?
Technically, I'm 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 in lab up at Columbia.
Is that
and
right?
And then I come down to the shows after that for the 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. call time. And sometimes I go in on the weekends before shows, though I've been...
So, Matt, what the hell do you do from 9 to 5?
Oh, man, nothing nearly that impressive.
That's Matt Harrington, the other Matt, who may not have studied neurobiology, but is a board-certified expert at taking a joke. So, Matt, what the hell do you do from 9 to 5?
Oh, man, nothing nearly that impressive. You know, Roomba, my kitchen.
I was going to say. Yeah. I didn't see you there.
I go to yoga.
You're not in my class.
No, I'm not studying neurons.
Very impressive. So, two actors from the play, and one who knows how brains work. Maybe one of them can help me solve the scientific mystery of why my cynical, over-analytical brain likes it so much. Now look, it is a play about a mystery. I'm hoping, as two of the actors in that play, playing actors in a mystery, you will solve a mystery for me. And the mystery is this. Why do I like it so damn much? Any theories?
Well, I think it's incredibly well structured. I think the Mischief guys are insanely good at comedy. And I think, you know, I've done comedies before, but I've never done a comedy that's just this well done.
Tight.
This tight, and the way they build, and it's like a symphony of comedy. And just when you think, you know, and the way the laughs come, they come in these waves, and you know, you think it's over, and then there's another thing, and another thing, and another thing. And I think, I'm just so impressed by the play itself, that it's able to keep people laughing with new things for that long.
Not good enough. There's got to be something more. You know, if I'm going to find the smoking gun, maybe I should take myself out of the picture. Why did the average person who isn't a writer like me...
Ugh, boy.
Why did the average person sign up for 2 hours of delight? Is it just that it was delightful, or is there something more going on?
I mean, I'd say that apart from the structure, which is excellent of the play, I think it also satisfies a very specific niche that there isn't really a lot of right now, especially in the big commercial Broadway world, which is this sort of old timey, old-fashioned slapstick commedia dell'arte-esque comedy that just is meant to have you in belly laughs really rolling throughout the show. And there just aren't a lot of that kind of show out there.
So right it now. Took a play from England? How dare? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those Brits, man, they keep doing that.
You yeah. hear that,
bringing
Henry?
Good stuff over.
Fair enough.
I totally agree. I second that. You don't see this kind of comedy anymore. And I also love that it's brilliantly written, but it's not intellectual. It's not heady, I don't think. I mean, it is, but the experience of it, it's dumb, you know? And mm-hmm. it's
dumb genius.
It's genius dumb.
That's
exactly right.
That's the whole point. It doesn't It doesn't show you the That's ways right. that it's actually, it's operating at 11.
Yeah.
It doesn't show you that because you're just laughing at the pratfalls.
But it is brilliantly structured to look dumb. Yeah.
Structure, comic timing, and yet, even a Juilliard-trained actor-slash-brain scientist, a joke expert good with the Roomba, and the guy obsequiously agreeing with them both, that's me, are grasping at straws. I think we need to call in a bona fide authority.
And, you know, that was interesting about them. I am the perfect person to talk about because...
Jason Zinnemann is the comedy critic for the New York Times and the author of Letterman, The Last Giant of Late Night.
I think, and this is something I've been writing about and talking about for 15 years of covering Broadway, is that there's a certain kind of really well-made, really funny, middle-brow comedy that Broadway used to specialize in and used to dominate in the culture. And it no longer does, and it's ceded that territory to television and stand-up and all these other areas. And so what's remarkable to me is this company Mischief, which is an improv company, it's like Second City, right, has come along and proven that, oh, surprise, surprise, people actually want to see a hilarious physical comedy, you know, pinpoint timing. And it's not an accident that Noises Off has been revived many times. And I think it's notable that it came from a comedy world source, because there's something, for various reasons, I think in the theater they've kind of internalized the idea that, like, all right, this is dead. The boulevard comedy is gone. Neil Simon is, those days are finished. And so this doesn't have an audience. And what was notable to me, I mean, the play Gone Wrong, it, to me, is exceptional.
Well, that's why they're hungry for it, but that's not why it works. Why? How does it work?
And remind me where you've seen it.
I saw it in London with my oldest daughter, 10, and then I saw it in New York with both my daughters, 10 and 5.
So I've seen it now 7 times.
Kevin, have you no shame?
So I've seen it now 7 times, so I think that makes me 5 times more appreciative of it than you are. But it gets me. It gets me. I came at the play That Goes Wrong as a fan of just straight up great writing, because I'm a snob about it and so impressed with how they do it. They're tacticians in that way, let alone the comedic timing, the farce of it all, the real middle brow comedy. But I'm wondering if there's, you're a critic of comedy and theater, beyond the writing, why do you think I like it so much? I'm going to throw it in your lap. Why am I such a cynic?
I can answer.
So joyful at this, and if I had a ticket for it tonight for the 8th time, I'd go tonight.
I'll tell you why.
How does it break through my barriers?
And at the risk, I'm going to do something I don't like to do.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Which is, I'm going to criticize critics.
Okay.
I'm going to criticize my own tribe here, which critics take a lot of flack, especially theater critics in particular, and a lot of unearned flack from theater people. But in this case, I think somebody who is a comedy writer like yourself understands the incredible difficulty of pulling off all the various kinds of comedy in that show. And you're absolutely right. There isn't just one. There's everything from pratfalls to jokes on language. There's kind of old vaudeville kind of stuff. There's many different kinds of comedy. And as someone like yourself who's in the business knows how easy it is for those things to go badly or mediocrely. And critics, on the other hand, I do think, and I'm generalizing here, have a bit of a blind spot, not in terms of appreciating the level of difficulty, that actually pulling that show off is as hard as pulling off a Michael Frayn play about big ideas. And so, it, you know, that play got fairly good reviews, but it didn't get raves here. And I think it deserved it because what it's often the difference between a good review and a rave has to do with the level of ambition the critic assumes that is going on. And in my opinion, that's the blind spot.
At risk of agreeing with a critic, I agree.
I utterly agree. And I'm glad I made you say it, because you said it with more eloquence than I could have. That's it, the level of difficulty. It's hard to get any play mounted, let's be honest.
Yes.
And so we all should come at it with some charity.
Yeah.
I feel, even critics.
Right, and they do.
And they do, fair enough. I would even say that it's working at a level thematically that we may not see, because two things. It's investigating the idea of incompetence right now, because these are incompetent thespians that still manage to get to the curtain call despite everything.
Right.
I think that's interesting to see incompetent people. Finding a way for the audience to root for incompetent people is hard to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, and it's a great comedic conceit, certainly, but I also think there's the underdog. They are underdogs. It's this D-level theater troupe who has made too many big swings, Cat, James and the Peach, and yet they keep trying. I don't want to necessarily be philosophical about, you know, the underdog versus the bully, but there's something about it's the play that goes wrong right now in a country that's going wrong, in a world that's going wrong.
I'm preaching to the choir and the critic. He's converted. But I still want to pass this comedic theory by Henry Lewis, which to me is like talking drama with Shakespeare. The fool doth think he is wise.
I have a theory about why this particular production both rings true to me and rings hilarious to me and made me come back so many times. And it's this. You had mentioned, you know, particularly this time in the world. I mean, I think that there's something grand about this particular production because we are watching incompetence pull it off. They still manage to get to the end of the play. The chandelier falls, yes, but they still take their curtain call. And I think that at a time when, you know, people might think their particular country's going wrong or that the world's going wrong, the play that goes wrong at least has both high and low stakes in a way that we can laugh at it. They may be in physical jeopardy, but in the end, it's just a show, and yet the show must go on. We're rooting for them every step of the way, even though we laugh at their misfortunes. So it's kind of, it's an interrogation of incompetence.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think that it totally has that. I think it has that in common with, if you know, the Great British Bake Off. That has a similar thing, you know. It's incredibly high stakes, but at the end of the day, it's
what comes out of the oven. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And to some degree, they're underdog because this is a minor theater company trying to outreach their bounds. They have done plays that they didn't have the budget for. They have tried to be taken too seriously when they shouldn't, and to some degree, they're trying to usurp the establishment theatrical community by doing more than they can actually pull off. And, you know, I think we're living in an era in which we're trying to find some comeuppance against the bullies in our life. But you may be rolling your eyes. I can't see you.
No. That all makes a lot of sense. I agree. I totally agree.
Okay. He may totally agree, but he was also totally rolling his eyes. That's okay. I can take it. So the critic and I have our theories on humor. And the Mischief artistic director agrees with our theories on humor, or at least, you know, is humoring us. But we need some science to back us up. Jason Zinnemann.
You said a group of theater makers who had worked in comedy who, with a grant from the Mellon Foundation, met to talk about why comedy is so scarce and why there's a bias against comedy. And the list of reasons for the bias against comedy in the theater, which include, and by the way, it feels like I'm about to start a top 10 list, speaking of your Letterman book, four reasons. One, skepticism that comedy is important. Two, not trusting silliness. Three, the criticism that something is, quote, sitcom-y, unquote. Four, that too many artistic directors have no sense of humor. So
I'm the son of an artistic director, so that's very funny to me.
There you go. But I think you and I are coming to some conclusion that in its own way, comedy can be important. So number one should be written off. Who's to say about the other three?
Yes.
And what, you know, you can't control for the other three. Some artistic directors don't have a sense of humor. Fine, they can have, you know, unfunny repertoire.
If only we had at our disposal an artistic director with a sense of humor. Aha! Henry Lewis re-enters stage left.
Well, you're an artistic director with a sense of humor. Let me just ask you about that first one. I'll ask you a question that I wouldn't want asked of myself. Is comedy important?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it totally is. I think that it's
you can just say full stop. I can let you off the hook and say comedy is important. Damn it, full stop. I'm done. Moving on. But if you'd like to elaborate, I'll let you do that too.
I think laughter is really important. I think laughter can actually, you know, I think just in life, if you can have a sense of humor about something, it can help you solve problems that are otherwise difficult to solve. And I think, you know, having humor in relationships and in, you know, I don't know, I think whatever you do in your work life, you know, if you can approach it with a sort of sense of humor, not that you shouldn't take things seriously also, but I think if you can approach something with a sense of humor, then I think that's really important, because I think that, you know, there's a kind of truth in comedy, you know, and I think if you can laugh about something, you can kind of, you can understand it in a way that it is perhaps a little bit, I don't know, it's like you can create connections, I think, with people through comedy and through laughing and through...
I agree, yeah.
Finding the funny side and things. So I think it's important for that reason. And I think it's important for, you know, in terms of the on stage, just because I think it's great to be able to have that kind of release and that kind of escape. We live in such a crazy world that I think, you know, people really want that and need that, and that should be available to people. And I think that... I think that's why you need to have comedy.
The play that goes wrong is not a play that reminds you of the troubles in the world. Perhaps it's that simple. Or perhaps the mystery is yet unsolved. Luckily, as I said, this investigation is a multi-parter. In a future episode, we'll keep the case open and stay on the hunt. We'll also ask the cast and creators, what is the worst thing that has gone wrong in the play that goes wrong? I'll ask Jason Zinnemann what the success of this play says about the current state of Broadway. And no doubt I'll have seen the play 7 more times by then. If you enjoy The Backdrop, please subscribe and rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen. The Backdrop is produced by Nella Vera, edited by Nella and by me, and part of the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.